And hopefully you found yourself at Deuteronomy chapter 6. And whilst I'm going to endeavour just to be as brief as I can be in terms of a sort of vision for what we're looking to do here at St. Dionys, I do want to read the whole of chapter 6, and if you'll follow it with me. And I guess the question I've got in coming to chapter 6 is what, if anything, does the Bible have to say? Does God want to say through his word to us about our responsibility for and our life with children and young people? Because it would appear there's an awful lot that's written to adults in the pages of Scripture. It doesn't seem to be an awful lot of reference to children. So how are we to understand our role? What is it that God wants us to do? Whether we're a parent, primarily, I guess primarily I'll be speaking to parents tonight, as the word will, you'll see. But actually by extension in our Christ-centered family, if all of us are called in some way, shape or form to be surrogate parents to the young people that God has blessed us with. Deuteronomy just means word or words, we might put in brackets, of life. Here is how God, who speaks, wants us to live. I'm going to read the whole of the chapter. These are the commands, decrees and laws the Lord your God directed me to teach you to observe in the land that you're crossing the Jordan to possess, so that you, your children, and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live, by keeping all his decrees and commands that I give you, and so that you may enjoy long life. Hear, Israel, and be careful to obey, so that it may go well with you, and that you may increase greatly in a land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord, the God of your ancestors, promised you. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road and when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. When the Lord your God brings you into the land he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac and Jacob, to give you, a land with large flourishing cities you did not build, houses filled with all kinds of good things you did not provide, wells you did not dig, and vineyards and olive groves you did not plant, then, when you eat and are satisfied, be careful that you do not forget the Lord who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. Fear the Lord your God, serve him only, and take your oaths in his name. Do not follow other gods, the gods of the peoples around you. For the Lord your God who is among you is a jealous God, and his anger will burn against you, and he will destroy you from the face of the land. Do not put the Lord your God to the test as you did at Massah. Be sure to keep the commands of the Lord your God and the stipulations and decrees he's given you. Do what is right and good in the Lord's sight, so that it may go well with you, and you may go in and take over the good land that the Lord promised on oath to your ancestors, thrusting out all your enemies before you, as the Lord said. In the future, when your children ask you, what is the meaning of the stipulations, decrees, and laws the Lord our God has commanded you? Tell them, we were slaves of Pharaoh in Egypt, but the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. Before our eyes the Lord sent signs and wonders, great and terrible, on Egypt and Pharaoh and his whole household. But he brought us out from there to bring us in and give us the land that he promised on oath to our ancestors. The Lord commanded us to obey all these decrees and to fear the Lord our God, so that we might always prosper and be kept alive, as is the case today. And if we are careful to obey all this law before the Lord our God, as he has commanded us, that will be our righteousness. So how are we to bring up our children in the ways of the Lord, in the word of the Lord, in life? And you see that it's through the commands, decrees and laws, verse 1, that we might know them, teach and observe them. Moses is going to teach and observe the people of Israel, verse 1, so that, verse 2, your children and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as they live, by keeping all his decrees and commands, so that you may enjoy long life. You may live well. So primarily our task is to teach and to pass on that which we've received from from God himself, that it may go well with us. And Moses sort of brings that out, verses 10 to 12. You can see there as he sort of breaks off from talking about when you're in the land, don't forget the Lord, and he just reminds them, the second bit of verse 10, it's a large land. It has flourishing cities. Houses are filled with all kinds of good things, and we had no hand in that. All things is one of the liturgical prayers in the communion service. All things, it's a prayer of thanksgiving for the offering. All things come from you, and of your own do we give you. We didn't generate any of this stuff. You've given it all to us in the first place. Our life, the air in our lungs, our bodies, our minds, our hearts, our capacities in whatever realm, and our children, and all that they have. All things come from you, O Lord. That's what effectively Moses is saying here. Be careful not to forget that. It's an amazing thing that God has given us. So much blessing in so many ways. And we are to teach our children. Now, primarily, I think this is, by inference we could take here, this is primarily the role of parents. So who is going to bring our children up, or the children up, in the ways of the Lord? Primarily, I think the Bible would say the responsibility is for parents. Parents are the ones who will give an account for all that the Lord gave them. So the Lord is going to say to Joe and I, in due course, when we meet him face to face, tell me, what did you do with Rebecca, Luke, and Emma that I gave you? And we will be called to give an account for their lives. I mean, they too, they will as well. We teach them to be independent of us. But while they are, in a sense, dependent on us, we are primarily, as parents, I believe, the Bible says, we are primarily responsible for them. But what I want to say is that as a wider church family, and it is a lament in the West that we understand family in the tiny nuclear sense, not in the way that African nations, Indian cultures understand, where there's a much wider and extended family. I think the church has a real role to play in the shrunken West, where nuclear family groups can come together into this Christ-centered family, and where we can, as it were, borrow aunts and uncles and brothers and sisters and godparents and so on, so that, let's just take, again, the vicarage kids, they haven't just got to be bored to tears by mum and dad. Maybe there is a scary warden who comes in the house every now and then, or wonderful friends who just pop by and who will chit-chat life and the gospel to them, so that they hear it in an accent, in a way, and from a life that's not just mum and dad. And we personally, can I just say, we count that as a huge privilege. It's why we love opening our doors to you guys and for you to come in, because it's just such a great help to us as parents in our primary role of raising kids, if there are others who support. So that's the vision, that we're looking to help and support one another as parents. And those of us who are not parents yet, or not called to be parents, it's a wonderful supporting role that you can do, so that we're all working together to teach these children. But how do we do that? And just briefly, two observations from this chapter. The first, it seems to me, is by knowing what it is that we want to pass on. It's by knowing the Deuteronomy, the word of life, and the source of that word, knowing God the Father through the Son by Jesus Christ, being in love, verse 5, with the Lord our God, with all our heart, all our soul, all our strength, every fibre of our being, devoted to knowing as much as we can of God the Father through the Son and by his Spirit. Being in love with him. So that the commands that Moses gives today, verse 6, are on our hearts. Literally the heartbeat of our life is knowing God and what he wants, what he desires for each and every one of us, and obviously for our children as well. I say that because look at verse 20. In the future, when your children ask, what is the meaning of the stipulations, decrees, and laws the Lord our God has commanded you? Verse 21, tell them. And I want to suggest it will be quite difficult to tell our children if we don't know ourselves, in such a way that we can pass it on in a way that they can digest. We can eat a big 3-course meal But if we've got a little three-year-old, we had a three-year-old for lunch on Sunday. So I saw this in action. We had the Flanagan family for lunch, which was wonderful. And little Olivia there, she's three. And there was roast beef and all sorts of things. And we can cut our own. But what Mummy and Daddy Flanagan have to do is cut up into little pieces the food so that Olivia can eat it. And in the same way, I think we need to be so familiar in our relationship with the Lord that we can, as it were, cut it up into bite-sized chunks so that a three-year-old can chew on it. And you'll see, I mean, let me briefly read again. Tell them, not just a brief story, tell them about the past, the history. Where were we and where have we come? We were in Egypt, trapped there. But the Lord, he brought us out from the bondage of slavery and into this freedom. It's an exodus account in Precy. And it's a spiritual exodus, isn't it? From time when we were bonded to sin to freedom through the Lord's deliverance. And we'll need to be so familiar with that ourselves as parents and as teachers that in some way we can cut that up into bite-sized chunks for the little people that God has called us to be with. So, be familiar. Your own story in one or two sentences. How is it that you come to know and love the Lord such that a five-year-old or a nine-year-old could begin to grasp that for themselves? It's quite a challenge, actually. I mean, we might, if we had time, we might sort of pause here and do that as a little exercise. How would I explain getting to know God to a seven-year-old in a way that a seven-year-old would understand? Probably different for a seven-year-old boy than a seven-year-old girl, perhaps. And the second thing, these are very practical things, aren't they? Knowing it for ourselves and then actually passing it on. Verse 7. Quite interesting, isn't it? Impress them on your children. These commands, these words of life. I think. Impress them on your children. I think there are times when we can insist that certain codes of behaviour, certain language, are basically unacceptable within our Christian family and our wider Christian family. And we can take authority to say, that's not how we are in this family. That's not how we do things in this church or in this group. We can take authority, impress these things on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home. So where's that? Is that around the TV, watching the TV, around a dinner table? Just when we're together, either at one parent and a child or as a family. When you walk along the road, well, we occasionally walk along the road, but actually we have these wonderful things. They're big metal boxes with wheels, and we all sit in a close proximity, all within hearing distance. And little conversations that you can have, just 10 seconds here or 5 seconds there, just picking up on conversations so familiar and so your heart is so full of the Lord, it beating the Lord, that you hear an opportunity and you make the most of it just for 5 or 10 seconds. They're asking for a nibbly little biscuit in spiritual terms. So don't give them a three-course meal. Just give them the biscuit. And in it goes, because we're doing this all the time. When you lie down, bedtime. When you get up, breakfast time. I don't know. When are we together? When can we maybe have, as I'm talking now primarily family units, but when is it possible just to have 1 or 2 minutes where we think in some way of God and his goodness, all that he's given us? There, on the bookstall and actually in the second-hand library as well, there are children and infants Bibles, a whole range of Bibles. Some of them are a bit iffy, if I'm honest, but some of them are really good. And we've used two or three as our children have been at different ages and stages that have been really faithful to the Bible text and just, you know, good, well illustrated. And we're still in the practice of not every breakfast, but most breakfasts of reading a little Bible story takes 2 or 3 minutes just while we're having breakfast. And that just sets up the day and just sows in these things. It just sows in the story. Now, it may be a bedtime thing, it may be at other times, tea time, whenever works with you. But I really encourage you just to drip, drip, drip and impress upon your children the provision and the goodness of the Lord. Write it on your hands, foreheads, door frames. Well, you know, in fact, Ursula, well, you've just been out there. You saw some acidic juice.
And it has a piece of And the guys put on the
phylacteries
and things on their hands.
Maybe the equivalent would be one of those sort of posters with a dove or something you post on the wall. It has a little inscription.
I
don't know.
Sure.
That kind of thing.
I don't even think a lot of Jews know what's actually in there. They just know that it's something that they
have to do. I remember someone used that. He had a Christian poster. You know, you get these sort of slightly naff, cheesy Christian posters with a verse on them. And someone had one on, a friend of ours had one on their loo door. So as you were sitting on the loo, it was opposite the loo door, and it said, "God can do amazing things." Oh, no, with God, the miraculous can happen. That's it. With God, the miraculous can happen. You're sitting there thinking, I hope not, right here. on your door frames, on your gates. It's just a constant little reminder. It's drip, drip, drip. The goodness and favour of the Lord. I alarmed some of you with this email I sent out by way of reminder, but I did some maths. If you've got a three-year-old, then you've had 1,095 days with them. And until they're 18, you've got about 5,000 left. If you've got a six-year-old, you've had 2,190 days with them, and you've got 4,380 left. We've got Becky, she's 13 and a half. So we've had well over two-thirds of our time with her before she's an adult in the eyes of the state. I mean, actually, she's legally able to do all sorts of things before that are quite adult. And the other day she said, "Dad, I think I know what I want to do on my gap year." This is my 13-year-old. I think, right, you're thinking, I'm just thinking, let's get you through your GCSEs, but you're thinking gap year. You're already thinking, I'm out of here. I'm flying the nest. I know. It was a little bit of a wake-up call. I was thinking, where did you get gap year from? You're in year nine. But, you know, that's where she's beginning to, you know, flap some wings on head. And it was only yesterday I was changing her nappy. It really was. And that's why I don't want to get intense about it, but, you know, the opportunities that we have, we have a number of them all together here with these little people, but my goodness, the time flies. Some of us who've, Jenny nodding, with kids who've flown the nest, as it were, and it just seems, you know, when you're in it, it seems like you're forever. It seems like you're forever going to be changing nappies or feeding or the tea bath bed. We used to call it tea time torture, you know, because it was just... It was when blood sugars were low, you're trying to get this food inside them, and you know they're tired, and so you need to get them to bed, but they don't want to go to bed, and there's a tantrum, and you think, I've got that every day, the next day, and the next day, and the next day. And you think, this will never end. But I tell you, it does. It won't last forever, Ben. But God bless you in it.
You've got your keyboard
down. God thanks at least. She'll help. It's just that at the start of this year, I think I'm wanting to impress upon us that we prioritise on what's important, on where we want to spend our time, our energy. Isn't it worth just giving a little bit of time ahead of Sunday, preferably not on Sunday morning itself, to think about a session, if we're down to lead a session, to chew it over, to cut up the meal. We'll get it fairly quickly, but can we cut it up and slice it up with the help of the materials and resources that are here in such a way that by Sunday we're confident, prayerfully confident, that we can begin to feed, and that maybe some of them I don't want to eat, but one or two of them will just go, thanks, and gobble it up. And it may be that that little lesson that you do on that Sunday, in your own weakness and kind of, you know, in your fallibility, but that little lesson feeds a life for 6 months, and they just grow, and they remember things. They're like little sponges, these children. They remember things for months and years afterwards that we've long since forgotten. And I want to encourage you that I think it's biblical that we're involved in that ongoing talking and walking and drip feeding the good news of God's love and provision for these children here. That's vision. Number four, house rules, and I'm going to hand quickly on to Sue. I think actually all I want to say is thank you so much for, just look around everyone here, just the way in which you are so good with the children that we have on a Sunday by Sunday. I think I must admit the last all-age service, this last Sunday, Yeah, this last Sunday. I just thought they were, the children at the front, they were so brilliantly behaved. I mean, you hold up presents. You know, I was expecting some kind of stampede, and they were all sort of rather demurely sort of deferring to one another. It's a wonderful help. I mean, there's dear Tom who was there with the guys. It's a wonderful help if there are one or two adults, if, you know, if children are around en masse, one or two adults come with them. I know, and Tom in particular is very good, but others too, just to help marshal, as it were. And I think it's just great because... I'd like to feel that when we're all together as a family, we're like those sweets that have probably been left at the bottom of the tin over Christmas. You know those ones that no one really wants to eat? And they're the ones that are soft on the outside, but they're all hard and horrible on the inside. And I kind of feel that's a sort of vision for the church, that for visitors and guests, I want to be as sort of welcoming and embracing as possible, because most people who come to church occasionally are absolutely, with small children, are terrified that everyone is going to, the faintest squeak, everyone's going to turn around and I talk to baptism couples and families, and the main question they've got to ask, not about the water or the thing, is it alright if the children come? And we've got some friends and family and so on, come. Is it okay if children come? And they're paranoid of this sort of caricature they have of the church, kind of tutting. So I want to do anything we can to blow that image out of the water as we exercise this sort of family vision. So if there's a, you know, if they're, you know, running around a bit or kicking or screaming or whatever it is, we just be as patient as we can be and as loving as we can be with those on the edge, on the outside, as it were. But where I've sort of, and I'm conscious, I mean, I hold my hand up here, I've maybe given over the signal that, oh, it's, you know, please don't worry about the children, it's fine, and if you need to go up at any time, that's fine. I'm really speaking to the people on the edge, the visitors, to the home team and the core. I think what I'm trying to encourage is some kind of discipline and that when it's a time to sit and listen, as we're all sitting and listening, even if you don't understand everything and it's going over your head a bit, nevertheless, the polite thing, just for a little while, is to sit relatively still and listen. And that's the kind of house rule. I'd never say that. I don't want to say that on a Sunday when there could be visitors and, oh gosh, no, my child's going to fail that test. But home team, as it were, if I can kind of presume that upon us here, to have some kind of order and a kind of example pattern that we can set for others. But actually, I want to say really thank you, because I think by and large we do that well. I think that's all I want to say really by way of house rules. And certainly all I want to say of vision. Does anyone want to ask anything or say anything at this stage? Add in. Build up some stock. Yeah.